Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2011. Lecture 15, delivered on October 24, 2011. The title of this lecture is Weighted and Marginal Cost of Capital.
Today, weighted average cost of capital and marginal cost of capital. I need to begin this lecture by posing a problem that was set forth by two finance professionals, academics, more than a few years ago. They were Miller and Modigliani, and they put forth a very challenging question that everyone kind of laughs at. Well, obviously you didn't see the big picture, but the point of their challenge was to make us look at why they are not correct in the real world. They weren't stupid. They knew that the real world indicated differently from them. But they wanted to challenge us to say, why is it different in the real world than our theory seems to suggest? Here's the problem. Debt is cheaper than equity. It really is. You understand that bondholders get paid before the stockholders ever get paid. That's just it. It never is different from that. If you lend the company money, the company, by law, by contract, has to pay you before the shareholders see a single dime. That means that the bondholders have a safer position than the stockholders in every corporation there is. That means that bondholders expect a lower return than stockholders. The expected return to common stock would have to be higher than the expected return to a bond of the same company. That's being a little simplistic. But it would just have to be that way because the bondholder will be paid before the stockholder. So debt is going to be cheaper than equity, period. Why then do we see companies that have a mixed capital structure of debt and equity? Why would we ever see a company that is not 100% debt? If equity costs more than debt to the company, why would the company ever sell stock and have to deal with whiny shareholders who want their dividends, want their capital gains and all that, if it costs more to have them, you see? Why would you ever do that? I've asked the same question of myself for many years. I had kids and I had cats. Why the hell did I have the kids? It's because you lied to me about the pill. No. Shut up! Here's the thing. It doesn't make sense that we see a capital structure that would be like 50% debt, 50% equity, or 30% debt, 70% equity. There wouldn't be any logic to it because stock is more expensive, the cost of the capital, and we'll work it out. We'll do problems on Wednesday. You'll see it for yourself. Equity is more expensive than debt. So what the hell? Why would it ever happen? Now, this was a Modigliani-Miller proposition. All firms should be 100% debt. And, of course, everyone, well, you're so stupid. There are companies that have stock. And that wasn't their point. Their point was, tell me why. Why would we see it? The best reason we see out there that actually, and I know this for a fact, I mean, I've dealt with banks for companies and even for my own. You see, if I were to draw percent debt against the weighted average cost of capital, in other words, the weight of the cost of stock plus the weight of the cost of debt, and there'd probably be some different grades, maybe preferred stock, common stock, different grades of debt. There would be no question that if I had 0% debt, then my weighted average cost of capital would be the cost of my stock, the expected return to a share of common stock, assuming that there's only one kind of stock and one kind of debt in the corporation to make it a little easier. And as I added debt, say if I went to 50% debt, debt is cheaper than stock, so the weighted average cost of the two together, if I have 50% debt, would be half cost of debt, half cost of equity. But because debt is cheaper than equity, I should have a lower weighted average cost of capital. By the time I get to 100% debt, I should be down at the cost of debt only. This was the Modigliani-Miller proposition. That's a straight line. That should, the more your debt, the greater the percentage of debt in your capital structure, the closer to the cost of debt you get, and the farther away from the cost of equity you get. Why would there be any reason for a company to have stock under those conditions? Here's what we think. And again, their challenge was valid. And interestingly enough, it's even more valid now than I would care for it to be. It doesn't work quite this way. You see, because as you borrow debt, as you borrow money, at first, just borrowing money, that lowers your weighted average cost of capital because your cost of debt is lower than your cost of equity. But something happens. As you take on more debt, you get, you know, it's great. You can, your time's interest earned is, you know, is still okay. But there comes a point where you've got so much debt that your time's interest earned, remember that would be interest divided by EBIT, it would actually begin to that get a little too close for comfort. You know, you got a bank, you can cover an interest payment 10 times over, wonderful. You can pay your interest payment with EBIT 5 times over, wonderful. Oh, you can pay your interest payment with EBIT 2 times over, that's scary. Oh, your EBIT is $1 million and now you've borrowed so much money that your interest is $800,000. Oh, that's scary. Because remember, sales volatility, fixed operating cost volatility, the closer you get to an EBIT, to a times interest earned of 1, the greater the risk becomes, because any fart in your cash flow at the EBIT line, which would be magnified by fixed operating costs, gets magnified. So banks and lenders, as you borrow more money, as the interest payment gets closer and closer to what you would have earned to pay interest with, banks are going to say, you're scaring us. Lenders in general, investors in bonds are going to say, you're scaring the shit out of us. What the hell? We're going to start charging you higher because there is a greater risk. And the greater the risk, the greater the return we expect. So what's going to happen, and we certainly don't know where, it would be different for different corporations based upon such factors as sales volatility, fixed operating costs that magnify volatility. There's a point where debt begins to get more and more expensive because it's getting riskier to lend the company money. And so the weighted average cost of capital begins to bow back upward. And again, we don't know what we calculate it, obviously. And I'll, for a class like this, I'll just tell you what the optimal capital structure is. But in real world, there are ways we can calculate approximately what WAC is. But I just used a term there, percent debt and capital structure, which would, against the weighted average cost of capital, we see all economic firms, all firms rather, facing a weighted average cost of capital curve that's like a bow. It wouldn't be more a parabola so much as it would be more like a function called a catenary. But the bottoming out place, wherever it is, that's some percent debt and a percent equity. Maybe 40% debt, 60% equity, 70% debt, 30% equity, wherever it is. We call that the optimal capital structure. It's where the weighted average cost of capital is at its minimum. And I will tell you this. Companies bust the extra nut to know what that WAC is. And once they know what it is, they will keep do what they have to. I've even seen disclosures on stock, sales of stock where they said, we're selling the stock to get back to our optimal capital structure because they'd acquired too much debt, and so they wanted to back themselves back up to this bottoming out point that they had calculated. I've seen companies that just borrowed money, not because they needed it, but because they were too heavily weighted toward equity, so they had figured that they must be up here, so they essentially just borrowed money to increase the percentage of debt in the capital structure of the corporation. They do this. This weighted average cost of capital is a very important thing to companies because it represents an extraordinary amount of money that you lose because you, if you're up here, say you've got too much equity and too little debt, you're paying a lot of extra money that you don't need to. It's just superfluous money. So you would borrow more and simply, sometimes you would borrow more and buy back stock with the debt that you acquired to bring yourself back down to the WAC. That's the weighted average cost of capital. It is not, interestingly enough, the driving force in capital budgeting. That is reserved for the marginal cost of capital. What the last dollar of capital is going to cost you. Now, when you've already decided on your optimal capital structure. You've got that already done. And for the purposes of this class, as I said, I'll tell you the optimal capital structure. Then, when you say, okay, we're considering this project. It's going to cost $10 million. The way you consider it is, okay, we have to maintain our optimal capital structure to finance it. So if let's say the optimal capital structure is 40% debt, 60% equity. Okay, that $10 million has to come 40% from debt, 60% from equity. Then they say to themselves, okay, what's the last dollar of this project going to cost us? Because as we borrow more money, that's going to cause our weighted average cost of capital to change. If it causes it to go up, we're every last dollar we borrow to finance this project as part of the mix of equity and debt is going to cost us more. So, for example, let's say this $10 million project has, we figure that its internal rate of return, or its return on investment is 7.2%. You figure out, okay, we're going to be issue some stock, maybe issue common stock, issue preferred stock. They have each of their own costs. And then we're going to also be using debt at the same time. Let's say that, $9,900,000 of that, the last dollar that we borrow up to $9,900,000 costs us 6.9%. But we have to finance $10 million. Because the cost of debt is moving upward, the cost of that last $100,000 cost us 8%. We'd reject the project. Wait, what? 9.9 million of the project you could finance below the return on investment, and just that lousy last 100,000 is above the weighted average cost of cap of the return on investment. You're going to reject the whole project? Damn straight. That's exactly how we're going to do it. Okay? You see, that project does not happen without all $10 million. And that last $100,000 is above the return on investment. It's going to cost us more than the return on investment. End of the project. Does that make sense? It shouldn't. Let me give you why it would happen. You're thirsty. You have to drink a gallon of water a day. You have to drink that much. Any less, and you turn into a mummy. A beef jerky, yes, beef jerky. Teriyaki flavor. It's great. The chunks, you know, those big steak beef chunks. I mean, those rule. Well, please focus on what I'm doing here. Okay, you've got a gallon of water. That's required of you every day. Required. Okay, I give you a gallon of water. Okay, the 95% of the water in here, the top 95% of the water in here, it is delicious water from the island of Bali. Young, beautiful people swam in this water and peed in it to make it even more healthy. The amoeba that live in the water will make you go to the toilet frequently. It's wonderful water. The 5% at the bottom, the 5% at the bottom that you have to drink, oh, that comes from the sewer down south. Go ahead, drink up, cowboy. Oh, don't worry, you won't hit that 5% until the end. Don't worry, 95% is going to taste fine to you. Well, I drink 95% and you'll die tomorrow. The project will die without the $10 million. You get the idea now? You need $10 million. That last $100,000 is costing you more than the return on the investment. That means that last $100,000 is a showstopper. It's not the entire thing. You're going to look at that gallon of water and say, FTS, I'm not going to drink that. I'll find something else to drink. You see, I don't care what happens at 95%. It's that stuff going down there at the bottom that seems to be reaching up with little sludgy hands saying, come for me. That's what's going to get you. You see, and that's why we'll turn down a project. And it's, you would not believe how pissy people get when in other parts of a company they've got these great ideas. The ROI of this project is 12%. It's going to be $5 million. Well, we're finding out that the last $200,000 of the project will cost us about 15% because we're going to be bearing so much risk borrowing that money. Well, that's okay. No, it's okay for you, but you see, if I default on $1 of money, my company is gone. Your company is gone. So that 15% money, if I default on just $200,000 but I'm good for the rest of it, that's the end of my company. You get the idea now? I can't do it. I just cannot do it. So it's not the weighted average cost of capital that matters. It's the marginal cost, the cost of the last dollar that is what burns my ass. And so if I've got a whole bunch of projects that I'm thinking of, I prioritize them from the highest ROI to the lowest ROI and then see where the marginal cost of capital is as I hit the end of each one going down. That's what you'll be doing on Wednesday. It's actually cool work, and we do it even to this day, although they do it with computers now, la-di-da. Now, here's the deeper problem. There's such a... But that's what we're going to do, and it's very real work. And wherever you are in a company, one of the things that I found out for larger corporations was that many people are not in finance, which is a good thing because the world's brighter because of that. But what happens to their ideas, to their projects, it seems like it's capricious. We had a great product. We had a great idea here. Some idiot cut us down on it. We didn't do it because some bean counter or some finance pervert said no. And what I do here is to give you an idea of what is going on behind those decisions and how painful as it is sometimes, it's the right decision. Sometimes, you know, a project is great. Sometimes your kids come out well. Sometimes they don't. You shoot the kid if he doesn't come out great. But we don't do it in our families, but we should. But we do it in business because our job is to maximize shareholder wealth. And if I am taking on a project that would create the danger for a lousy $200,000 of a $500,000 project, I'm putting my company at risk of getting its ass kicked and having the shareholders not just lose on that project, but lose their entire value of their common stock. I can't do that. I can't. Now, there's a deeper problem that goes beyond this. I don't want to take you too far into it. If you're a finance major, you're going to see it at the end, especially if you take my advanced financial theory course. You'll see it head on. For the rest of you, it does have a meaning anyway. You know, I keep talking about derivatives, and I talk about them in negative terms. The media talks about them in negative terms. Derivative is anything that's like an option or a futures contract or something like that. Those are derivatives. Credit derivatives, swaps, CDOs, CDSs, CDOs, and all those are derivatives. Evil instruments that will end the universe and bring upon us the zombie apocalypse. As I had told you, in toxic derivatives, we estimate about $63 trillion in notional value in toxics is still spinning around out there. You shouldn't worry that much about it because apparently this past weekend, late last week, this weekend, Bank of America was able to slough off its exposure, maybe a little less than $20 trillion of that, onto the American taxpayers. No one seems to know. Well, there are some places that are talking about it, but most people don't know that the problem, $20 trillion of the $63 trillion problem has been solved because now the obligation belongs to the American taxpayers. Doesn't that make you feel good all over? Anyway, here's the thing, though. Unfortunately, the only security that is not a derivative is debt. Even common stock is a derivative. Specifically, common stock is a put option. I teach you to price common stock using the CAPM and that formula, and we still do that to this day. But the right way to do it is to price common stock as a put option. Because a put option is the right, but not the obligation, to make someone else take an instrument at a specific price, even though its value has fallen below that. That's a put option. Common stock is a put option. If the company's value falls below a specific amount, you, the shareholders, have the right, not the obligation, but the right to put the corporation to the bondholders. So if I owe the bond, if my corporation, I am the owner, my corporation owes the bondholders $20 million, and the value of my corporation has fallen to $15 million, I'll just put the, I'll just default. I'll say it's worth $15 million, it's yours. I owe you $20, now you have to take this $15 million. That's a put option, pure and simple. Common stock is not a primary security. Nothing is a primary security except for debt, and only the top grade collateralized debt. Everything else is just a derivative of this pure security called debt. That has an implication that goes beyond the corporate realm, and it actually reaches back to the very origins of Anglo-Saxon and other cultures, where ownership, the man's house is his castle, you do the Ganga walking, you walk your family around the perimeter of your yard, you can't be violated within your property. That would mean that that is all an illusion. Ownership is nothing but a specific set of claims on cash flows combined with a right but not an obligation to put the property, to put the asset to the debt holders. In other words, ownership is a myth at the corporate level and at the individual level. The implications of that are very disturbing, but fortunately for us, all we have to do is calculate marginal cost of capital, and that's all I have for you today. I thank you.